With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Introducing the greatest animated series you've never seen, Lightning Dogs. These canine commandos are lost on a post-apocalyptic Earth and battling the forces of the evil Glampire. It's a tribute to the cartoons and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, and Nerdy Show is hell-bent on bringing it to life.
Blocks sold separately.
Join us as we document our quest from the moment lightning struck to every world-building session and beyond, and make our crazy dream a reality. Roll with the pack at lightningdogs.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that might not be suitable for all ages, and listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. You guys want to do a podcast?
Let's do a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to use these in anger.
You're GM. They should never be used in anger.
The GM dies.
Their power is too great to be used in anger.
All right, welcome back to RPG from Scratch. We're on another design episode. We're getting high on life and death and undeath. We got a bunch of shit to figure out. We talked about tracking time before. I kind of want to get into this. I think the idea of tracking time may seem tedious to other people.
It does to me.
Right.
It seems tedious in my real life.
But if we create advantages for having done it, that's different, right? Especially because, like, there might be holidays and shit that matter.
Yeah, you already, when we were talking about calendars and having it be like a different set thing than what we're used to now and trying to reinvent the fucking wheel on the calendar year was already making my head spin. So now it's like, all right, let's break it down. Do we really need an hour or could it be a Quiblon?
Dude, I like Quiblon.
Look how Julius Caesar changed the calendar from the system beforehand.
I'm not Julius Caesar.
I'm just saying, Doug. It'll blow your mind the amount of work that that motherfucker did.
He did it from scraps in a cave.
He did it in Rome, and he was a religious figure, but whatever.
And dead.
Part of the first elected office he got into was being in charge of the calendar. And then it was after he defeated the Gauls and did two civil wars, he was like, my first act is going to be to make sure that this position I have holds no importance anymore. We're not going to have to manually insert days for the year all the time.
So, okay. Well, actually, then another thing I wanted to bring up before we get into that is, we should think of our game as a bunch of modular pieces. Like all the systems are modular. You can add and subtract them. So for instance, momentum is, you could remove momentum from our game and mechanically it still works. You just have to find a different method of progression and you don't necessarily need it to use it for augmentation of your rolls.
Or, you could just say, yeah, if you just say, oh, you can't spend it on a roll, but it still tracks for experience.
Right. But so momentum is modular in the sense that you could completely remove it and move to an XP-based system or whatever, a milestone system.
Yeah.
The combat system could act this way. You could say, instead, if you don't want to get that deep into it, you could just use success mechanics, like number of successes, like the old World of Darkness and stuff. And alchemy, take it or leave it. Like, you can completely leave it out of your game.
I'll take it, please.
And
rituals, same.
Rituals, crafting.
The calendar, I think, is one of those things. But I do think it's important for world building because it creates a sense of history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That if we follow, will give us a lot of touchstones to keep moving forward, especially when we start talking about crafting. So we've already decided that alchemy works on a cooldown, right? Before you can attempt to do another thing, you know, it'll take however long. I think magic should work that way as well. So I think tracking dates, we should make it as easy as possible. And I don't think, and you may disagree, I want to hear disagreements, I don't think that our current calendar and mirroring what we do on Earth exactly, like with our 12-month structure and sometimes 30-day months, is the best system to help these players.
Nope.
I don't see how it makes it more difficult.
It makes it more difficult because they'll say, well, how many, like, we're going to, if we rename months, because why would they be called August?
Sure, of course,
Augustus is not there.
Yeah.
Why is 1 month 28 and then another one 31 and then 30?
Don't we just say every month is 30 days, period, end of story?
We could. We could do that.
Yeah.
Instead of doing 490-day months, we could do 12 30-day months.
Yeah. What's our rotation?
Oh, no. We already had this discussion.
Yes.
So, and then we divided, and then we also said that the days that we would, we even got a number for them based on that amount, and then there were four extra days, which were the solstices
and the equinoxes.
And the equinoxes.
Yes. Yeah. That's the framework that I wanted to have this discussion in. Yeah. But yeah, so the question is, we could do that. We could split them up into months of 30 days, or we could do 10 day weeks, 9 weeks a month. And then between every month, there is one day that stands on its own.
All right. But how long is a month?
90 days.
90 days?
Yep, 4 months.
No.
Each one mirrors
a
season.
Don't call them a month then. Call them a season.
Yeah, well, we can call them seasons.
Yeah.
Each season lasts 90 days.
Yeah. That the only thing I don't want to do, like, the difference between a 9-day week and a 7-day week, not that huge. A 90-day month and a 30-day month is, that becomes, like,
sure.
And because month is a word you know and use in your everyday life.
Yeah, it would be very confusing.
Don't mess with it too much.
Sure.
So if you just even call them seasons, good. And then they could be 3 months in every season.
We could do that. I think that adds complexity if we have three in every season. Because, okay, so we give them a calendar so they can track their alchemy, their magic, their blacksmithing that we've all decided work on time cooldowns.
Uh-huh.
Okay. 10-day weeks,
uh-huh.
9 weeks long.
Okay.
Creates almost a square, which is just easier to use.
Yes. If you have that calendar in there. But also, you can subdivide it into months so that if you need to use a smaller fraction, you wouldn't say a number of weeks. You could say month. And everyone around the table will know that a month is 30 days because that totally makes sense to us even now.
But
it takes you a month to get there. You know what a month is.
Sure.
You say if it takes 30 days, it's fine too. But like, yeah, you could just also add those extra subdivisions, not make it any more difficult. But you could always refer to everything in the rules by a number of days.
Yeah. But is that easier? Does that add complexity? I think it adds. If we subdivide, we add complexity.
I don't think it's add or subtract complexity.
Yeah. It's just extra nomenclature that you already know.
Yeah, it's like saying sunrise, sunset, and noon. Well, why don't we just call them something else? It's like, well, or you could just say it's sunrise, sunset, and noon. It's like a week is a week is a week. A month is a month is a month.
I mean,
but if the standard unit of measurement is like the season is what's important, then fine. But if you say, if you just say, oh, it's going to take us 30 days. Oh, you mean a month? You could just say a month, and everybody automatically knows what it is.
That's true. If we want to stick with 30 instead of 90,
I'm saying there should be totally 90-day seasons, and you could easily, in fact, different cultures could be like, some of them would refer to them by seasons only. Or like one of my favorite facts is that when you refer to a year, if you were in Rome in Roman times, the way they write it down, they refer to it by who was consul that year.
Yep.
They never referred to it by the number. That didn't make any sense to them.
Consul.
Yeah, who the two consuls were. That's very interesting to me. So you could have people who work, like, the Aconitian Empire probably would work on a monthly system because you would have to have rent due. You wouldn't do it quarterly.
It's a good point.
It's broken down for that reason.
That's a good point.
But if you're just an agrarian society who doesn't have real taxes or the taxes are purely in grain,
well,
it would be seasonal.
Not to mention...
Or weekly. A 10-day week, that's different, right?
And not to mention a monthly cycle is important because of the moon.
And female bits.
Yes.
So I wanted to get into that next. Mm-hmm. So let's leave the moon off of it for the moment. Unless,
it's a 28-day cycle.
Yeah, until we get ready to incorporate some of that. So I'm down with making four seasons, and we can just... Well, seasons, let's not change the names of winter, spring, summer, fall. I mean, I think that's... That's fine.
We could change their name. They would mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Did we not already?
No, we did not.
Okay.
I think more importantly than naming the months right now, we need the names of the days between the months. So these days stand on their own. So the days between the seasons, the solstices, the equinoxes. Let's name them after different shit, right? Like, so let's name one after a god, right? Like a god who brings whatever.
Rebirth, new year, like what is considered the new year?
Yeah, let's go New Year, which is what, December 21st? Am I wrong about that? The solstices and the equinoxes? Hold on.
I was thinking in terms of if you want to name the solstices and equinox, I'm sure you could do something like first light, last light.
Long day, long night.
Because if it's the long day of the year, everyone knows what the fuck that means. If you say it's the long night.
I want to bring it back to religion as much as possible, because it would probably
that
hold
would
religious.
Be the basis for
yeah. So I would like the idea of like the beginning of the new year is like, oh, whatever. God's a god of rebirth that everyone kind of exists, but no one really like there could even be gods that exist that everyone know that are forces, but no one worships them because they only have a day. They wouldn't be something you would worship for throughout the rest of the year. But almost across all cultures,
like Santa
they're
Claus.
Like, yeah, but they're like, this day is his day. Everywhere.
If you pick a hero for one of these, it makes sense because of an event.
And it wouldn't be someone you'd worship all throughout the year. It wouldn't make sense for him to be your number
Saint
one
Patrick's Day.
Yeah, your number one deity. But on this day, everyone around the world goes, well, that's his day. He did a great thing on this day. Like, this is his day. And it marks the beginning of our year. Like it's a new day. He came back, or he's a new guy, or he started this era.
Okay, so let's start with the longest day of the year. So when the night is the shortest, right? And the
could it be the four original practitioners of magic
for the longest day? Like maybe they stopped the sun, like
because
Jehovah
fire, decay, radiance.
Yeah, because magic came 500 years ago, right?
No, like 2,000 years ago, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, the ritual magic came like...
Okay.
I don't remember exactly.
But like body personal magic came...
Like 500 years ago.
So I'm saying maybe they were...
Was that the Doom? Was that the time of the Doom?
No. Doom was like 175 years ago.
So maybe they were the first X-Men, first class or whatever.
So if the longest day was the dude or
fire
or woman who said, I'm going to stop the sun in the sky.
Or like a Prometheus figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, where it is a god, but brought the light.
This actually kind of works surprisingly well, because it would be the longest day is fire, the shortest day is ice, and then the two balanced days are life and death.
That could be cool.
Radiance and decay.
That's not bad. I was thinking the longest night we could attribute to the black moon in some way.
Certainly the Eshwin thinks so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fine to mix cultures. That's what I didn't preface this. What I want to go with is, if we look at our week and why each day in reality is named what it is, we see a mix of cultures. Yeah. Same with our Gregorian calendar. I kind of want to do a little bit of that so that this world has history and length. Mm-hmm. So how about...
I do also want to discuss the starting years for different cultures. Would be interesting.
Yeah. Well, we know that Harad goes back the furthest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait until Eshwin New Year for this shit to go down.
Or not even different New Years, but like the guff might be when they established their actual civilization rather than whatever they were doing.
So the winter solstice. Let's start with the darkness, right?
Uh-huh.
We never named the black moon.
I thought we had the brothers.
Yeah, no, we said that they were. We didn't name the moons. We named the brothers.
Okay.
In that episode.
Okay.
Dakinocean brothers. So let's what's the black what were the black and white moons names?
Yin and Yang.
No.
Wow, that's very original. Let's do something like did you guys ever see The Fountain?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They talk about the Mayan Incan, right? Incan, not the Mayan? I don't remember. It's Incan or Mayan culture having Xibalba as being this area in the sky, and they didn't know it was a nebula. They didn't understand any of those terms, but that was their what they decided where their afterlife was.
I think you're thinking Sebulba the pod racer.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They were really into pod racing. Yeah.
Yeah, his fucking...
Incans were really into pod racing, I believe.
Now, this is pod racing.
No, this is podcasting.
Did anyone see in the extended version of episode one where Odin Mandrell dies, but like in the extended version, his whole family's there?
Yeah.
What? Come again?
I didn't realize that till the last time I watched episode one.
Oh, you mean one of the pod racers that died?
One of the guy who dies in the cave.
Uh huh.
One of the deleted scenes that's in the extended version is his family's there. He has three kids, and like his wife just got out of the hospital, and I was like, I'm so glad you took this out of the movie.
Don't they like call it out?
Just, yeah. It made it way sadder. Yeah.
They're like, oh, his family's George. Here. His
yeah, it's like, and she just got out of the hospital with their third child, and you're like.
I thought that would have killed in the theater. I thought it would have been hilarious.
Oh, no. It's so bad.
So how do we feel about Zerusha with an X?
All right.
Cool.
For the black moon?
Fine.
All right. What's the white moon?
Chad.
They have to both be female for the moon worshippers because they're
Chadette.
Sisters. And also because the white moon corresponds closer to female reproductive cycles.
Asha.
That's good, but that's already a character in the Game of Thrones books.
Yes.
Asha? Okay.
Yeah. And that's Theon's sister.
And I'm pretty sure Asha is a god?
I like something with A, though.
A fiend.
All right. A-P-H-E-N-E.
Sounds good.
Afine and Jerusha. Okay. All right. So the winter solstice, because there's a black moon, something with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Moonrisers believe that she is the library, right? Like, that's where things go. So maybe something like Libraries Day, Librarian, when you organize the Dewey Decimal System. something related to that.
Your due date for your book. Return date.
So what do you do at a library when it's long?
You look up porn on their computer.
Mm-hmm.
Never done that. It seems so rude.
It is rude. You also don't make porn at their computers.
You can film it in the back, but you don't make it on the computers.
You would say like a study session.
Sure.
Something with archiving.
Oh, that'd be nice. Like it's a day to
defrag. Get your shit in order. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's for the longest night?
Yeah.
Maybe because you can't go outside, so get your shit together.
Yeah.
Kind of like a cleaning?
Yeah, but organizing.
Yeah. Organizing.
Yeah.
So like... kind of
or death. even just like taking stock.
Yeah, it's taking stock because you got to make it. You've basically made it through the worst part of the winter.
Yeah, you're at the halfway point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like take stock of what you got, plan ahead, and take notes for when the next season comes around for next year. What did you go through? Like it's about being smart about surviving,
settling accounts, kind of thing. Like
could be yeah.
The Jewish holiday, the atonement or whatever. They're just like, we had a problem, now it's over.
Yeah.
Not reclamation, but Accountant's Day.
No.
I know, it's terrible.
We could say it's like she's watching you.
Mm.
You know, like the evaluation or something, like that kind of thing, where she's like making sure she's looking down on you.
She's taking her time going across the sky, so it's like,
yeah,
everybody clean this place up. It's
like it's more correct to be like, you can call it Zerusha's inventory, but that's not fun enough.
Yeah.
The idea that the spooky dark moon is going to hang around for a while, so get your shit together, because it could be bad if you're caught out in the cold.
What about an eye opening? Something like that, like where she's going to be watching you.
Evaluation.
Rex Manning Day.
Ooh.
What do you call it when you have an evaluation at work?
Exactly what you just said.
A work evaluation?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that would maybe be another fancy 90 word
day
for
eval?
Yeah, I guess so.
What do you call the person? What do you call them going to go do it? Like them, like the path they take?
Patrol? Your route? Your.
That could be cool. Like
patrol. Inspection?
Inspection's good. I like that. But I was thinking, like, so patrol, I think, is good because it's audit. Audit.
I like audit.
I like audit too. So you'd be like, you could call it black eye audit. Or something
Ooh.
Like
that. See, that sounds spoopy. I like it.
Yeah, the black eye audit.
What about the black audit? Just
the black audit. Yeah. But it's not something somebody does to you. It's just like, yeah, we're preparing for the black audit.
Like, you know.
All right, winter solstice. All right, so summer solstice. By the way, now, we're already fucking this up because none of these happen between seasons.
Million years in the future.
We'll just move the seasons.
No, I'm not moving. What are you, crazy?
No, I mean, like, we'll just call winter the beginning part of the cold winter. Or I guess, I don't know, we can rename them.
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, no, nobody really. Just us.
Yeah.
All right, summer solstice. It's the longest day. Is it attributed to the sun, or is it attributed to somebody who brought fire magic? Like, you know, something like that. Somebody who brings light.
What's the benefit of the longest day?
Tannin's outburst.
You can work longer.
You know who I think would really appreciate it? The rod.
Yeah,
a long day would work well for them.
Maybe
so
the basking.
Their first king. Name it after their first true king.
Maybe. Yeah,
I like the basking though.
Yeah,
yeah. Just you go outside. You just soak up that solar energy.
Mm-hmm.
You mingle.
Yeah.
The recharging. The.
I like the basking.
Yeah. You just want to do basking.
I imagine it as like the Harad's July 4th. It's the beginning. It marks the day.
That's how we celebrate.
Yeah,
we go outside and we just
just hang out,
bask,
cook food, and chill.
And it's the commemoration of the founding of the first Rod dynasty.
It's the day we break.
So name the first king and just call it blah blah blah's basking.
So they call it the vernal and autumnal equinox. I'm just going to call them the spring and fall.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
why are you being so fancy?
We don't say autumn.
I do sometimes.
No, you don't.
When I'm trying to be fancy.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So spring equinox, the days are equidistant.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they're equally long as nights.
I feel like both of these have to be very opposed and should be related to the same thing. These are 2 days of balance.
Maybe
between
two
things.
Two opposed heroes?
Yeah.
Was the rabbit and the duck? Remember that?
Yeah.
From Liam's campaign?
Yes.
Well, that, I don't remember.
There was the rabbit and the duck where there was a great hero. It was a rabbit who was a trickster, and then...
Oh, I remember. Okay, now I remember.
And then, yeah. And then Cap as Chuki was saying, no, I think the duck is the hero of that story.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do it like that. Like,
yes.
I don't want to call it like the hoppening. Let's do...
the quackening. Well, what is... do we even have rabbit and ducks anymore?
No, but we could call this one Drakewing for the fall equinox. Drakewing and the rabbit for spring. What something spring-related, right?
Yeah, that's
Easter. With rabbits, yeah. You
know, shagging.
Fucking a lot.
The flowering. It's going to be like the flowering if everything's in bloom. And
but it needs to be related to the rabbit, I think, if we're going to make these opposed heroes, right? Mm-hmm. So we got Drakewing. What was the rabbit good at? He was a trickster, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like an April Fool's, which is spring.
Mischievous, but
yeah,
full of life.
What would...
Jest something. Jester.
Jack's Jest.
Oh, I hate that guy.
What was his name?
Bugs Bunny.
Fuzzy Wuzzy.
He was a bear.
We could make it. True. We could instead of bugs, it could be bags.
All right,
and you can call it false bags, and you just give somebody a bag, and they think it's one thing, and it's something else. I don't know,
but it's still it's pleasant.
Like yeah, it's a good humor.
Like for Agnes's ashes, you walk into town with that bag and say, "Hey, who wants to see what I got in my bag? Who wants to see? Let's pay some money, see what's in the bag." You open up, and it's like, "Ah, it's a false bag. There's a gross worm in there." I gotcha.
Are we cool with false bags? Anybody have?
It's like this is the natural evolution that devolves. It started with Kinder eggs, and then it goes into the distant future.
Exactly.
And it's like, what's in the bag? We're going to have the unbagging. All right. Thank you all for coming to my
what's
false bag unbagging.
Bag?
I don't know what's in the bag. Let's open up and find out. It's a turd. Okay, that was a bad one. Let's try the next one.
I feel the continuity is preserved if you do that. Yeah, it's so we've got winter solstice, summer solstice, so the black audit and the basking, and then spring equinox, false bags, fall equinox, Drakewing.
Mm-hmm. This is the idea of what's in the bag. It's right. Just it's this whole April
so I think,
Fool's.
I think the Drakewing, the duck hero, the Krex hero that opposed the rabbit, he was probably a more classical hero of just straight up action, doing what they do, whereas the rabbit is a trickster.
Yeah. You got to have the no nonsense guy fighting the trickster.
Yeah, where you do noble shit on Drakewing.
Or just like prepping for winter.
Yeah, well, probably like you tie up loose ends.
Yeah.
Not in the audit sense but of being like you bury the hatchet between issues and you give gifts probably
I like the idea of you bury hatchets so that if you happen to stumble, like if you're out in winter and it gets bad, you've already buried all
get rid of your grudge.
Exactly.
You've already gotten rid of your grudges, so if you show up you're like, "It's cold out. Can I stay here?" They go, "Yeah, we settled."
It's like the end of Njal's saga.
Yeah, we've settled everything.
Having a holiday that's all about getting rid of grudges or settling feuds is pretty interesting because it's balance. It's restoring a balance. It's before the dark plunge.
Well, the whole thing is the...
Before the black audit. Really? Yeah. Did you do your due diligence before
on that day? Did you? Yeah. Yeah, on that day, did you...
Well, even and the whole thing is the bag's present thing is like about being mischievous and kind of tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. And this even
you make
you,
up for it.
Yeah, this is like
you took that joke
like,
a little too far. Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. And the idea, because like you say, it's if you're during the black audit, you're caught out in the snow.
Yeah.
You go knocking on someone's door, and it happens to be the person you didn't make up to. They're like, "Now you come to me during the black audit, seeking my shelter.
You come to me on my day of the black audit."
Shit, you got an electric kettle for Christmas?
It takes 3 minutes to get boiling water.
This shit's pretty dope.
It is a morning game changer.
Damn.
I have two pieces of bacon and a cup of tea, and it just sets me for the day.
Because when I was sick, I started getting into tea, so I was trying different kinds because John and Crystal have a whole bunch of kinds. Like, help yourself to anything you want. And I'm like, you got like 8 different kinds of teas. I'm going to try them all because I don't give a shit.
Berries.
And the one thing I've realized about all tea, I don't think any of it is potent enough. Like, I need, like this just tastes like you sneezed in my water with something, you know, like it's this peppermint tea. I'm like, oh, peppermint? And I'm like, there's hardly any peppermint in here.
Did you...
Irish breakfast tea. Tastes like dirt. It's awesome.
Let's name some days.
All right.
Are we ending...
ending it by saying day?
Day, yeah.
Yeah.
Should it's we, a good convention. Let's keep it up.
Somebody's day? Are we going more for that convention? Like Thor's day?
Yes.
Okay.
So, well, how about let's just make some sounds and end them with day.
Cool.
And then we can decide what those sounds mean later.
I like it.
So how about Gil Day?
I almost like the first day just being called first day.
It's too many. It's too hard to say. Be like, I'll see you on first day instead of...
First day of what?
How about Fur Day?
Fur Day.
F-I-R? Fear Day?
Fear Day.
Fear Day.
It's just a shortening of first day. It's first day of the week. It's Fur Day. Day.
I like it.
Fur Day.
Monday was just called fuck.
like Mondays.
Someone's got a case of the fucks.
I wish. You could buy it by the case. Let's okay, and I think day two. Let's do Gil Day, G-I-L-D-A-Y. Yes.
So Fur Day, Gil Day.
Let's do Mups Day.
Mups
no.
Day.
No, that's too silly. Muppety. It's Muppety.
If it's the middle of the week, maybe like mid, like not mid. Yeah.
It's not. We're not five. We're not even close to mid.
Thups Day.
Sal Day.
Oh yeah, because we're doing a 10.
I like
thing.
Sal Day.
Sal Day.
Sal Day. How about like Rids Day?
Rids Day. I like something. That. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Quatu.
Quatu. Well, the problem with qua is it makes people think of four.
Payday sounds nice.
Payday, huh? Hey, yeah. We could have an Aki Day, something like that. Well, no, it would be Dairon's Day.
Yeah.
Let's have the final day be Dairon's Day.
I just gotta make it to Dairon's Day. I swear. Look, I know. I didn't settle my debts on what's his face's day on the Duck Day, but before I get to the Black Audit. Just wait till Dairon's Day. I swear I'm going to get it to you.
That's 180 days from now.
Mill Day.
Actually, 182. All right, yeah. So day 10 is Dairon's Day, but it does kind of sound like Durin's Day. I'm okay with that.
Durin's Day.
Hmm? Yeah, Durin's Day is the Hobbit.
Mill
so we
day.
Got Fur Day, Gil Day, Sal Day, Rids Day.
Mill Day.
Like maybe that one's literal, like it's for working because it's the middle of the week.
I was also just thinking like short of middle, and then you don't want to say midday because that's a thing.
But also like hey,
mill day,
do your work at the mill today.
Yeah,
grind some grist.
So what are all the ones we have so far?
Fur Day, Gil Day, Sal Day, Rids Day, Mill Day.
What about Zint's
Day? And Dairon's Day, which is the 10th.
I was gonna say Truss Day, like T-R-U-S-S.
Truss Day. That so a truss is a physical object,
right? But it sounded nice.
How about Trues Day?
Tuesday.
It sounds like Tuesday.
I'm thinking Zint. Let's expand our.
It's like we're going to go to Ruby Tuesday.
How about Tons Day? T-U-N.
Tons Day. I like Tons Day. Yeah,
we're sticking around the same letters, like
because some of them are too long or like they aren't strings. A single syllable.
Yeah,
they aren't easily syllabic.
I'm with you though, Max. We haven't used a G. Yeah, we did. We used Gilday.
Yeah, Gilday.
We have 10 letters, so it's tougher.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
What, Zim's Day or
no?
Fuck off with your Z shit.
Yawn's Day.
Yawn's Day. Instead of yawn, how about your
day?
Nah.
Like Y-E-R, yours day.
Yours day. It sounds like your day. Day
No,
I think if you add the S, it's no longer like your yours. Day. Like, but yours day. Day.
I don't like it with the S.
Yin?
Like kids yin's day? Each other.
Yin day.
Gig.
Yin day.
Gig.
Yin day, I like.
Yin day? Yin
day Hyundai.
Yin-day.
Hyundai. We'll do Hyundai. That'll be next.
So yin day?
Yep. Yin day, Hyundai.
Day 7.
Val Day.
We haven't used O, and we're on the 8th.
Oms.
Oms Day.
Oms Day.
Ooh,
Oms
I like
Oms
I like
Day.
Oms Day.
And I was thinking about Val Day.
Val Day.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Latin word.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ipse Val Day.
So we have 10.
We got 10 now, yeah. Here's our week. Fur Day, Gil Day, Sal Day, Rids Day, Mill Day, Tons Day, Yin Day, Oms Day, Val Day, Dairon's Day. I know we're kind of getting in the weeds a bit here, but I think little stuff like this helps us build forward. So I like that we established this. So I apologize to everybody who is super bored by thinking about calendars.
Like talking gibberish about calendars.
If making a calendar doesn't excite you, then I just don't know who you are.
Yeah, who are you? Up next, periodic tables.
This is what I do at home by myself.
All right. So. Here's the thing. It's just the same. It's the same periodic table. We name them different things, but...
But it's that cool Star Wars one.
God, fuck you.
There are a bunch of elements that they don't have because they haven't discovered them again.
Yeah. It's six. Six elements.
We've got
the
rock.
The full periodic table.
We've got rock, metal, air, water.
Fire and double fire.
Yeah. Double turns fire. Out, You don't need fire.
That's just radiation.
Yeah, I was saying it's like the make me sick thing.
Turns out when magic works, you don't need a lot of science.
Let's populate our world with fauna.
All right.
All right, so we've done some of this already. In the beasts of burden category, we've got dillos and we've got those lizards that I never named, right, that pull carts and probably plow fields and whatever.
Beasts of burden.
Them. Yeah, beasts of burden. But I was thinking, let's add a bug. Let's add a bug to that. We'll have three. We got the dillo, we got the lizards, we got the bugs. So what kind of bug is this? I mean, obviously the most work-centric bugs that we can think of are ants and dung beetles, where they just truck. They just move forward. So maybe some kind of beetle,
I feel like. Rhinoceros beetles are always good.
Yeah.
They and they're just like they dope looking.
Yeah. So let's name those lizards. What do you think the lizards are called? I said they were kind of like thorny devils, right? Like they're desert
Garsh.
Centric. Garsh. Done.
What about
colloquial called thorny devils?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got a thorny devil there.
Yeah. He was looking more pissed off than a guff riding a garsh. I tell you what.
God, I don't know why, but I love that.
Don't give me no garsh, you guff.
You got a garsh look about you.
God, like that's, so, that's good. Don't no, like it's solid. Always as playful as a dillo. He's hanging out.
He's as calm as a dillo in a mud bath. I'll tell you that. Right
I
now.
Love that. Yeah.
Calm as a dillo in a fine mist.
All right. What about the beetles?
Rhinoceros fusca would be cool, too. The water bugs. The ones that walk under the surface.
Yeah, but you couldn't
ride
plow
that
a field with it.
I was thinking
or
for
pull a cart.
Right.
Water culture. You could.
Yeah. That could be cool. I'm just trying to think of like underground. They're being like, okay, you dig.
Yeah.
And you'll get a treat. You know, you pull this thing, you'll get a treat.
The rhinoceros Earthworms? Beetle, because if you saddled a rhinoceros beetle that was really big, you'd feel pretty safe on that thing.
But you'd look like somebody riding a cow, so it'd be strange.
But with a horn up front, you know, like
it needs to. So the horn on front actually harms the idea, unless we think of it's much shorter and it's used for digging or plowing or something like that, right? So something almost like rhinoceros length instead of rhinoceros beetle when it's just giant. Things sticking off their face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Could almost be like a siege creature that you just...
I like ants.
How about skicked? We'll call them skicked.
Cool.
All right, skicked. And they look like a large beetle. If somebody wants to draw art, they can...
With the work ethic of an ant.
They love treats, more so than the dillos. And I was thinking tortoises for whatever.
We have the giant tortoises too, right? The big tarrasque-sized tortoises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's leave tortoises off of Beast of Burden. Use them for other shit later. So, okay, at least for now. So we've got the dillos are armadillos, the garsh are thorny devils, and the skicked are large beetles.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into mounts.
I'm with Doug on his idea.
What was it?
I don't even know if it was originally my idea.
Dogs.
But yeah, dogs.
Riding dogs?
Yeah, like canids. Doesn't have to literally be...
But less wolfy, more doggy.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah, because they're domesticated.
Yeah.
You know? And like the idea...
Oh, what if they're like giant basset hounds?
I'm thinking like...
Because they're like known for how well they track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could always find their way home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, what are the racing dogs?
Greyhounds?
Greyhounds.
Just big greyhounds.
Well, we can make it... This is a million, billion years in the future. We can make it any type of mixed thing that we want.
But four marshals riding giant basset hounds.
Giant bloodhounds.
Yeah, bloodhounds.
That makes sense. They would be like all... Because
like,
they'd have tons of skin.
If you had a horse that could do all the things a dog could do...
It'd be the most amazing animal. It'd be
the most amazing thing in the world. So
Horses are the worst.
Agreed. we're going to lose some listeners here. Yeah. But
If you had a horse-sized dog that you could pet, it fetch shit for you.
So wait, so every horse in a Disney movie?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Except better because it's a dog. Because
it's also fluffy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is a hound that's like a bloodhound? I imagine you can't see its eyes. You know what? Saint Bernard
might be better. We can have different breeds of dogs for different areas. Are there traditional mount?
I mean, there's different breeds of horses.
Yeah.
You know,
so yeah, but they all look very similar.
They do.
They look more similar than dogs do.
Bloodhounds, greyhounds.
But if you just do a modern day breed that is just scale sized up, that's not interesting as much.
Yeah, I think if we think along the terms of Saint Bernard, where it kind of is good in all climates, right?
But also, I just like the idea of a big gray, because a big greyhound would just be a fun horse looking thing.
Yeah, but you can't take it anywhere. Their skin's so thin, like
you could race them, but that's probably
yeah.
But there's a million years in the future. You do whatever you want.
Their skin's so thin. You put a jacket on them. They ask how they look. You're always like, you look amazing.
Well, that could be a nobility thing, like.
The nobility is
because they don't care.
And they look regal.
Well, they race them. So you think like difference between an Arabian and a Clydesdale, you know, like, well, granted, it's way smaller than between a St. Bernard and a Greyhound. Mm-hmm. But so I was thinking something along the lines of St. Bernard, where they're known for their tracking capability, because we're thinking Marshalls, right? Like, what would be the most common workhorse dog that you'd pick? It'd probably be a Labrador, right? Like something like
an Australian Shepherd or something.
Shepherd, too smart almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we could let's go with Australian Shepherd because they're fluffy, they're fun, they've got cool patterns on their
yeah. And then you could do like mastiffs, like my old dog Moose, was that Cane Corso?
Yeah,
that
I love
it. Dope.
So we got these giant canids. Think that the cruise control version of this is Australian Shepherd. Mm-hmm. It's smart. It can obey complex commands like modern dogs.
Yeah,
and it's reasonably fast, but can't keep up with other stuff. Right? Yeah.
But it's more of a, you know, like human versus cheetah kind of thing.
Yeah. So
long distance.
So let's think. I'm trying to think of just a sound.
Nid?
That's
just nids.
It just makes me think of tyrannids. The nids are coming.
The yip yips. The bow wows.
Yippers.
Barkers.
How about like something like Barunga? Is that too tribal?
Yeah.
So the Japanese, do you know what they say? They write that dogs say it's wan, W-A-N. They say wan, wan, wan.
Just to make the internet happy, we'll just call them doges.
I kind of like the idea of something like Bruce, but like then I was like Brucina, Brucilio, and I was like, oh, brucellosis is a disease. Bruchia? Brochia, something like that.
Brochia is fine.
Mm-hmm. Brochia over my knee. Let's do Brochia because it's like, hey, I bought this mount. It's so expensive. It broke you.
Damn, but also you just be like,
nice brookie got there.
Let's call them brookies.
Or brooks.
Yeah.
Brookie. The full name is brookie.
Because you could say horse or horsey.
Yeah.
There's a brook or a brookie.
The proper term is brookia. Yeah. And if someone was very proper, they'd be brookia. But also like, oh, it's a brookie. Oh, it's your brook.
I got to go feed my brook. Hold on.
Yeah.
If you don't like that, change it.
God damn it, Max. Stop introducing the chaos. Fact that people can do what they want.
Yes.
Into this game. All right, Brookia or the canids. Let's do, okay, what's next? I mean, bugs are an obvious choice. What would the birds ride on the land?
Ooh.
All right, that's a weird one. Snakes?
No. It just looks goofy.
It would look like the Mexican flag?
Yeah, it just looks goofy.
And the reason I sold Max on the dogs was, I said, could you picture anything funnier than a bug man riding a dog? But yeah, what would a Crex want to ride? And I don't know.
I think snake is fun.
Their whole motion is dumb for riding.
Dogs are good.
Man, what's the name of that lizard that runs on the water?
That's a frilled lizard.
That goofy.
I believe it's called the frilled lizard, right?
Yeah, the one that like the Dilophosaurus.
It runs on two legs, but upright.
Yeah,
instead of like a Dilophosaurus.
Yeah. So kind of like a tauntaun, but like...
You see a lot of YouTube videos of people that are in the side of the road in the desert, and you're like, look, we found one! And as soon as it runs at you, they're like, fuck it! And they just run away because it's...
What about like an antelope?
Ooh.
That could be cool. Like a stag or an elk or something. Pronghorns. So American pronghorns are the fastest animals in America. I believe that's true, the fastest land animals, because in the Pleistocene epoch, we had a cheetah in America that they were running away from. Nothing can catch up with them right now. So we call them antelopes, but they're non-antelopes. They're pronghorns or American antelopes.
Mm-hmm.
So the Crex ride the pronghorns.
They're lighter, too, so you know, that's something.
I do kind of like the idea of somebody riding an ostrich, but I feel like the Crex would get offended.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's been done. I feel like flightless birds.
Liam had a good point during the break.
Chocobos,
because if humans could ride other primates, they probably would.
Oh, we would. We totally would.
Like if you could saddle a gorilla, would you?
The silverback is almost his back's almost flat, man. Yeah. If I could ride that thing galloping.
I'm saying we'd do it if we could.
Can you imagine traffic? Like,
who would cross you in traffic if you're riding a gorilla?
If everyone's riding a gorilla, and just traffic would be like road rage.
The problem is they're so close to human.
Yeah,
that you could argue with them, which is a problem.
Because they'll win every argument.
Well, no, you could just be like, I think you should take a right here.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, just...
Boss, I'm going to be...
Start signing and arguing with you.
I'm going to be late. He's in a mood again. He won't start.
He's just taking every left. I don't know. He wants to go somewhere. I just don't know where.
There's a kitten on the side of the road. We had to stop for 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's a traffic, like 8 miles, because like a kitten.
He wouldn't even
a bunch of gorillas. Like, yeah, everybody has to get off their gorilla because they're all like hopping over each other's backs to stare at a kitten and go.
Just like, you couldn't even put the saddle on him in the morning because he's busy finger painting. And he wouldn't stop.
This is a bad idea. Why did we do this? Why did we get rid of cars?
He's finger painting the inside of the garage. Can't stop him.
There's fields of rotting cars.
Now I gotta, fuck it. I'm married now. I gotta buy a second gorilla. It's just going bad. They don't like each other.
My goddamn neighbor bought a cat. I haven't been at work in a week.
Also,
I'm just thinking fucking Amy, the fucking tugging device.
Oh, from Congo? Congo. Oh, we'll never stop talking about Congo.
Why would we?
I don't know. I came to a realization that I only like bad things.
So a pronghorn, call him like something with a Z. You want to throw some Z shit in
there?
Oh,
now you want to go with the fucking Z.
Hey, we're on to bird mounts.
Zonda. Zillion.
Zonda.
Zonda.
Zonda's done.
Yeah. Zonda's got a nice sound to it.
All right, decided. We got the Brucia, the Zonda. All right, let's think of another one. Do we want lizards? Do we want...
What would the Hrod ride?
Oh, I would say,
what would the Hrod... Like, what's wrong with my voice?
What would a crocodile ride?
I don't think they... I mean, they're big. They're tough. They're armored. What do they need to ride something for? Just when they're tired?
No, they just... Snakes. Okay, first of all...
No.
I do like the idea of a snake.
I hate it.
Just picture a crocodile man just laying flat on a snake, and it just takes off, and he's wiggling.
And he's just hissing in delight.
The length of them compared to their motion is crazy.
Out of all of the sentient races that we have, the one that would be most comfortable riding a snake would be the Hrod.
I agree with that. But just, riding a snake
is just on their head.
Fucking dumb.
You ride on their head. You're the only one who thinks it's dumb. Like, is it dumb to ride on Shai Hulud?
No, that's fucking awesome. But also, they're huge.
What if it's more like a chariot system? Like, you got a snake on it.
That pulls?
Like, several snakes pull you?
Yeah. Just think, all right. I'm just saying. All right.
The image is more ridiculous.
Doug, I do have, I have a question for you.
Instead of putting a saddle on a snake's head and riding it.
Several snakes tied to a chariot.
So,
they're all regular size.
So this snake is large enough that you can saddle its head.
Uh-huh.
Now, compare just like any length of a snake. So the head would have to be large enough to ride. That snake would be like
God, size of this table.
40 feet long.
I think that's fine. That's fun.
No,
the desert. The desert is large. What about an elephant shrew?
That's kind of cool.
If we're talking desert, right?
Yeah, that could be fun. Or like the little, what do they call it? The golden mole is the one that burrows.
Interesting. I was thinking elephant shrew because I watched a documentary on them. This is basically how
or
everything.
Even scarab would be tight.
Yeah. I was just thinking everything in this game is based on documentaries all of us have watched. Yeah.
The elephant shrew does that howl at night, just whee!
But they also create lanes. They also create lanes and like specific paths like through grass and the desert and stuff like that so that if they start getting chased, they know the entire route of this maze they've created, that they run at full speed.
Dope.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. So what do we call them? I wanted to call them Rickies, but that's too much like a mongoose. Because I feel like that'd be a good enemy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the Rickies are coming.
And it just
Snootlers.
It's just a mongoose the size of a tiger would be fucking scary.
Yeah, it'd be horrendous.
I would take the tiger, I think.
Yeah.
I think an otter the size of a tiger would probably scare me.
Oh, that would also be scary.
Equally as scary. But
there are lots of things that if they were the size of a tiger, they would be very scary. Yeah.
So we decided upon elephant shrew.
Yes.
Definitely elephant shrew.
And they are called the pash.
Pash. Done.
I like that.
But what does the rod ride? Like, what's their mount of choice?
The elephant shrew.
Elephant shrew.
The elephant shrew?
Yeah. They're desert animals. Yeah, they ride the pash because they're very fast, keep their nose down, and they create their own lanes. Like, you got to travel the pash lanes through the desert.
Like, that's what the nomads would travel, the pash lanes.
Here's the thing about elephant shrews. They're very meticulous about the cleanliness of their roots. They patrol them, and like, if there's a spare rock that's in there, they kick it out of the way. Because at speed, they need to take these corners very fast. So the idea that like maybe they don't so much cultivate the pash as they do like earn their trust. Like you put kid rods on them and they're like, yeah, just take the pash lanes. But you can't take a pash anywhere else. Like you can't be like, okay, well, I'm going to hop in my pash. We're going to cross the desert and go into the woods. Like, no. Yeah.
You wouldn't take a camel to Alaska. You know, it's like.
Well, there are cold weather camels.
Yeah, sure. But not the kind that we're talking about.
Well, the difference is not climate. Based. It's based on the fact that the roots are established. It's like the pash is almost like using a slot car. Like it's got roots that are baked in and you can only take those roots.
But they're off-road pash, but they are very rare and they are hard to train.
And they are, they're just very willful.
Yes.
Comparatively. Maybe it's a female-male thing. Huh? The females maintain the roots and you take them when the path is known. And people can make the pash establish new roots. By like putting down things,
you have to like recreate their kind of root. But then it's like when you are trying to bring. Well, we talked about ant farms earlier. Like with ants, like you're going to take them out of this element. Like, all right, we're going to establish a new trade route. We're going to make a new pash route. So we're going to like start making it. We're going to smooth it out. We're going to move as many rocks as we can. Sort of acclimatize them to it. Like when you take a goldfish home from the fair, and you got to put it in the water, let it adapt or whatever, and then it'll find its own way, kind of thing.
Maybe you can. Maybe you use the male pash to do it. Like
to cross the.
But maybe their ratio of female to male is like 4-1.
Yeah. Or even like this is can be like a silverback gorilla kind of deal where like only a certain percentage of males even. So it's like 1 in 10 males is an off-road pash.
Nomadic pash.
Yeah.
But if you control the pash.
And that's why there aren't that many nomads. Like they just have a control of this small population.
Right. They have nobody else has figured out, but they've got the way to attract the nomadic pash. Yeah. And you buy them from the.
That would work because. Then that's like established trade routes, like
yeah.
Like you could get a pash pretty easy, but if you want the nomadic pash, then you got to cough up that. That's like getting a stallion where you're like, all right.
Maybe you cannot own female pash, you cannot at all. Mm-hmm. But all of them, they take very careful count of who like of the female pash when they're born. They try to acclimate them to.
And they're just going through the paths, cleaning shit up.
But they've all been trained to take riders.
Esmond Trad would have he'd be down with some nomadic pash.
Yeah.
I grew up with.
Well,
pash.
I mean, they can only trade take ride. They're all kind of domesticated,
but
anyway.
They're just like taxis.
Yeah.
At that point.
Well, it's more like
bus routes.
Bus routes, or I was going to say the train. Yeah, they've got routes. They maintain them. Taking a nomadic pash and doing the legwork to expand the route is like somebody building a new
railroad.
A new line branching off onto it.
That's a campaign in and of itself.
That actually sounds. That sounds fun. Like
you got to be a trailblazer. Make the trade route between these two things.
Oh, it would just be called Trailblazer. It'd be so good.
Doug, that's your campaign.
Maybe it is now. I mean, I had an idea.
If you like that idea, take it because that sounds fun.
If that happens, I'm making another trod.
Yeah.
They're a big family.
All right, I like this. So we've got the mounts. Okay, so the beasts of burden so far, we've got the dillos, the garsh, the skicked, which are armadillos, thorny devils, and large beetles. And the mounts, we've got the bruchia, the zonda, and the pash. So canids, pronghorns, and elephant shrews.
Uh-huh.
The one we talked about the least, obviously, is the pronghorn, which are ungulate.
It reminds me of the noise an elk makes.
Yeah, well, the trumpeting. Have you heard that shit? That's crazy. Bugling, they call it. Sorry. Yeah, so maybe the zonda bugle. That could be cool. So they're an ungulate. Much like other ungulates, they probably have an extended rut. We gotta deal with this. And the birds and the bats probably deal with different version of the Zonda.
What do you mean by rut? What has begun?
The rut is their mating season.
Oh, okay.
So generally you want a female in the mating season to ride, I would imagine, because yes, the males go fucking crazy. They grow horns.
They'll fight each other.
They'll pee in their own mouth, gargle it, and then scream to get the scent out to make the women enter estrus.
How the fuck do you pee in your own mouth and then gargle it?
They have giant cocks.
Okay.
Doug? It's not as hard as you think.
Okay.
Liam, you don't have to show us. You can stop. Just put it away.
Liam, please sit back down.
So I'm going to play an elk bugle because I think we can go this direction.
The magic of podcast.
How the fuck do they figure out? All right. My piss stinks, but I got to get it out further. If I piss in my mouth and scream as loud as I can, maybe, just maybe, that'll carry the stink far enough that they'll hear me.
We could go kind of that direction with focus on the majesty of
The majesty
of the Zonda.
Your majesty.
There could be entire... Well, I think the nomadic Eshwin, right? The ones that kind of resemble the Romani culture. Maybe focus on that and the seasons and kind of get into the...
Oh, and the only time they're sedentary during the entire year is during the rut because they just can't. Yeah. Can't move our dudes.
Gotta wait it out.
Move our dudes.
So all of their holidays take place in that time.
Yes.
Because they're like, okay, this is the festival of such and such, and then afterwards we have to, during the black audit, we take stock of what we got left.
Literally stuck in a rut.
So I think that's enough taxonomy for the moment. I do want to talk about, we just wrapped Liam's campaign, Agnes's Ashes.
Boosh.
And for the listeners, that'll be a little while from now. But listeners are already familiar with our characters that we had. And we have some thoughts before we enter Max's campaign about our characters and what it means for the larger game's context. But Doug, specifically, how did you feel about Grandin?
Well, Grandin, who was Core Citadel, Step 1 Citadel, and Step 1 Champion...
And he got that because he was Tolden, right?
Yes, he was Tolden. Okay. Yeah. I was really confident with the build. Like, I was like, okay, these numbers make sense. Like, I feel really strong about this. And I had in my head, like, how I was going to play him, how I was going to use him on the grid, and it all made perfect sense when I sat down. In practice, it went very different. Now, to be fair, had nothing to do with Liam as DMing it, and it had nothing to do with the mechanics that are built in. I rolled really poorly for the first two episodes.
Interesting.
So, but rolling really poorly wasn't... It sort of highlighted the problem, and it may not be as common for other people, but the biggest concern that I had was having the reach weapon. It didn't really feel like a real spear to me because it had a Goldilocks zone, and you were either too far away, too close, or just right, and that's it.
In my experience, that's how spears are.
And that's fine, but here's where the realism didn't quite match up. Because, for example, if you're in real life, you're the Romans, and you have spear and shield, and people start to run up to you, you can start stabbing them, and there's probably a good chance they say, I don't want to go right up to that shield.
So why do you say that?
Well, I think you have to get up close to beat them eventually is the idea. Especially if you have a sword, you're going to have to get in close or you're going to die.
Yeah.
But I think the whole idea of having a reach weapon is to keep someone away. So, for me, the reach weapon didn't keep anybody away, like, the entire time. We were mostly fighting mindless beasts and stuff like that, so who just didn't know or didn't give a shit, and just sort of threw themselves at me. So, very rarely was I ever in a position where I moved up into a place, the person was the right amount away from me, and I got to try to even strike. Most of the time, people were running at me, and they ran right through my strike zone, right up to me, where I had to...
Invoking an attack,
but it wasn't even my main... I couldn't do any of my moves using the spear.
Right.
So I would always have to say, well, all right, I guess I'm dropping the spear, and then going to my sword, and that would just take up another action.
That's interesting. I think... I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're right. Because I think if you actually hit somebody with your spear on an opportunity attack...
Yeah.
The point is to stop their movement.
And they just would continue. Like, that was the thing. It's like, I stabbed them. Because in my head...
And let's say they took damage.
Right. Like,
but they still made it inside.
Right. In my head, I'm thinking, here's someone running at me. They're coming into my area of effect, basically. They're coming into my spot, so I'm going to... Oh, opportunity attack. I stab them. I succeed in stabbing them, and they just keep running on my spear into me is kind of how it felt. And it wouldn't make sense for me just to go stick and then pull it back out. My job is to keep them away from me.
So do you think that if we made it so that opportunity attacks with reach weapons can prevent somebody, if they hit, can prevent somebody from moving inside?
Maybe.
Because it makes sense. So let's say somebody's at that distance, right?
Yeah.
But then disengages in to the inside. I feel like that's more, I would expect that to happen. But if they're just coming at you,
right,
your spear should be able to tag them and stop them.
Yeah. I would, if they're running at me full force and I'm like locked in like a one-man phalanx ready to go, mm-hmm. and then I get an opportunity of attack and I hit them, why are they still able to come right up to me and make that weapon immediately useless?
No.
No what?
No, come on. Well, the only reason why the phalanx is effective is because you can make multiple strikes against a single target coming at you at the same time, and there's strikes coming from behind you. And it's already a thing where, like, the spear is good. Succeeds mostly as an offensive weapon. And it works as a rolling offensive weapon in a phalanx because you have so many people at your back and at your sides and you can defend yourself.
But it's also
a single thrust weapon.
Right.
So when you tag someone, you're not going through their gut. You're like slashing.
No, sure. But you're still talking real world. I'm talking about as far as like tokens on the grid.
Yeah.
There was no mechanical. There was no mechanical advantage other than I could hit you earlier.
Yeah.
But that gave no advantage to me. Like,
that's not true. Because you threaten a much larger area.
But that didn't change the way anybody attacked me.
It did. Because the way that they come in and what it means to step through any given space changes.
You got an opportunity attack, which you would not have had otherwise.
Yeah.
And it's always a situation where you can always disengage back. They have to incur an attack of opportunity unless they disengage again to get...
Yeah, so the reason why it's not true, Doug, is if you had just used your sword instead of a reach weapon, you would have gotten zero opportunity attacks instead of a ton every time somebody moved through that space. Because entering the space that is adjacent to you does not provoke. Moving through a space that you threaten to get close to you invokes.
And like I said, I did roll so poorly for most of it that it didn't matter. When someone, I had an opportunity attack and I just whiffed it, then, I mean, but that's just the dice. That's not the mechanics of it. But for me, it just got to a point where I was like, man, I am whiffing a lot. I may as well just have my sword ready because every time someone goes past my zone of where I can hit them, I have to drop my spear. Otherwise, I'm literally useless and then pick up my sword. Or
now to be fair, that was true historically.
Uh-huh. Sure.
But I do agree that if you hit somebody with a lance or the end of a bardiche or a halberd,
right?
If you do, it does stop them for that attack. Right. Like if they're running in and you tag them once, they're going to get an opportunity to try to go around it. But in that moment, you did stop them.
Well, like and that ties into the other thing, which was whatever plan I had for like trying to help control the battlefield, or like I'm going to make this spot unmovable. I want to take advantage of some of my scenes or dailies or whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get that chance until we were fighting because we had like a bottleneck that I could be like, okay, that's the spot that no one moves through, or I'm gonna stay behind the door and use my reach weapon finally to do some damage. But any time there was a point where I could either be surrounded or there was like a large open space, my only recourse would be to disengage back one. And now I'm like, I feel like I'm retreating constantly just so I can get a chance to hit somebody. Because as soon as I drop my spear and then I go back to my sword, it's like, why did I even bring the spear if I'm just going to stand my ground here?
It's funny that you have the... It's not funny, but it's interesting to hear this perspective. Because from everybody else's perspective, you might have been the most effective character.
Yeah. I think that was a lot to do because of my armor.
No. I mean because of this reason. Because the fact that you threaten such a large space and that people have to contend with you before even engaging you. The idea that... if they invoke an opportunity attack, there are severe consequences whether you hit or miss. And it's not a mystery. Mm-hmm. Like some sort of visual component happens for enemies where they're aware of everything being done to them and like everything that threatens them. Unless it's like a spell you haven't cast yet, if that makes sense. So what's interesting is like from my perspective, I'm like, Doug is controlling everything and being very effective.
Didn't feel like it. I felt I was completely at the mercy of whatever was running at me. And that if it's running at me, I have to get out of its way. I felt very much out of control and that I had to always respond to the last thing that hit me.
That's very interesting.
That is interesting because I'm playing opposed to you, especially in the animal cage fight. you wrapped up at least half the combatants for more than half the combat.
Yeah, you shut entire areas down just by just down. Choosing to move there.
I totally can see how numbers way that makes total sense.
I mean
sense.
On the board.
Or, no, yeah, so Liam means like, how do I make this combat relevant
right.
if Doug is here? It's interesting to feel like you didn't feel validated in that because like from my perspective, I was playing as Fricks. I was right behind you the entire time. I was like, thank God he's here.
I had to go straight forward through you. Looping around, you'd have to take way too much space because of your reach.
Right.
Missing opportunity attacks or hitting with opportunity attacks sucks.
I just felt like I felt more like an NPC in combat in the sense that none of my choices were my choices. It was always a response to it was like a king in check. Like every time someone came at me, I'd have to move or I'd have to disengage. I was always responding and never proactive. And now I realized that I had an area of effect around me that affected everyone else's game.
Yeah.
But on the player side, I wouldn't have called it fun because it was
interesting.
Just and that's not a dig at but this is not about how anybody else played the game. This is not about how it was run. This is not about any of that. It was just a matter of I built this character with these stats saying I can help control the battlefield because I can do this skill or I can do this daily ability. And in order for me to do any of that, the conditions had to be exactly right. And then when I did get in those exact right moments, I somehow maneuvered myself into a thing. I would roll, and then I would whiff. And I'd be like, this entire encounter, while we may have won, and it may have been fun for everybody, I felt like all I did was move my guy one space in a giant circle, and I didn't feel engaged in the combat. I felt very responsive to it, like reactionary to it, as opposed to engaged in it.
So opportunity attacks and threatening areas while being a bulwark is kind of central to the idea of Citadel, right? Mm-hmm. I think there might be a couple minor changes to make where you feel like you have more agency in those moments.
Maybe. And I think because right now the only real advantage about the spear versus why if you asked me to play this same character again, I'd probably say I'll just ditch the spear.
That is crazy.
I know,
that
and it sounds insane. Crazy. But the only advantage that it gave me that I actually felt like, oh, that actually came up to my favor was that it was a piercing weapon, so if I critted on a one, I critted with my spear. Whereas with the sword, it's almost like I feel like I could maneuver better and move
like
I know where I can move. Whereas now everything had to be like I was either always too close or always too far away. I was never
comfortable. This might be a value issue because in my space, in my headspace, so I, as Frixa, right? Like, I mean, I could attack at range with, you know, abilities that I have and stuff like that. But I was thinking the whole time, I'm jealous of how good your character is.
And because, the numbers, it all makes sense.
I only think in those terms when I'm playing, especially a support class like a tank. Like, I think I want to get in here and threaten this area just so that it frustrates the enemy.
Right.
Period. Like, that's where it begins and ends. But, like, would just having the ability to, let's say if you land an opportunity attack, if you could stop their movement but deal half damage,
maybe.
If you could choose to do that, just that, like if you land the opportunity attack, they try to move through the space that you threaten to get closer to you, and you hit with the opportunity attack that they provoked, you deal half damage, but their movement ends.
That might be a possible solution. I don't have a solution.
Okay.
it was really just the observation that I had a ring around me, and only when things were in that ring did I feel like I had a chance. And every time they were either past that ring or just outside that ring, I felt pretty useless. And I know that me being there cause you guys able, like if I whiffed on something, like an opportunity attack, suddenly it's like, oh, now you get a chance. And because of my character being stat that way, it did a shit ton of damage and was super valuable. But as a player, I was very unengaged in most of the fighting.
I think that's kind of the build of that character. Like, Kelton would get up into something's face, and he wasn't doing much. He had take the shot. But he was just there.
I think the difference
to,
is take the shot, though.
Yeah, take
you
the shot
is different.
Gave me that. Shot. Yeah.
Because having played with Liam as a DM before, I'm like looking at these encounters going, this is fun. Why am I not having as much fun as I think I should be having?
Probably because you went champion instead of something else, right? I think champion because you thought of your character as somebody who deals damage.
But also, I wanted to be able to take the damage and be like, get behind me. Like, you know, like, let me run in there.
You were very good at that.
Well, once I got into a position where I'm like, okay, literally get behind me because now we have this guy in the doorway. That fucking encounter was amazing for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because it's like, well, now I'm showing off. It was more of like, I'm controlling whether this guy moves through, and I'm protecting the people behind me, and with my reach weapon, I'm getting these dogs as they come through. That was like, I felt really useful during that entire thing. But anytime we were outside, and I could be focusing on an enemy over here, and then this thing just flanks me, and there's just nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. And now that immediately this thing has flanked me, my spear feels like it's useless now. So I have to spend a move action or disengage, and when I'm disengaging, now I'm falling back to a place I don't even want to be, only so that this person or this enemy can be in that Goldilocks zone only for the next round, because they're going to keep charging me anyway. So all I'm doing is constantly receding across the battlefield, making a trail backwards, hoping that I can just land the hit this round, because I know they're going to keep coming at me.
And that's not an invalid perspective. I think people may feel frustrated by that, but I got to tell you, as the squishiest person on our team, I counted on your character doing that. Like,
and
I could
do the same build again, just with a different weapon. Or
see, and that's what's crazy to me is, uh-huh, I think yours was the best possible setup.
Or I would lose the shield and go two-handed on the spear,
which is what Gaylene did.
Yes,
right, which was useful.
Only she already had a tank involved. Where, like, if she had been pure tank,
well, she was Krek's core Citadel step one champion.
Because the damage on my spear, well, if I'm doing the spear one-handed, it's the same damage as a sword.
Correct.
So at that point, I'm like, well, if you're up in my face and I need to drop this thing, I may as well just stick with a sword. But if I drop my shield and went two-handed on the spear, I can do an amazing, do way more damage.
Yeah, but you lose two armor, which
it might be worth it. I mean, and like
only,
in that case,
only on, again, on the opposite side of the numbers, and the just the amount of tangle you were, the fact that you were literally a shield is. I mean, I
can see that's super valuable and super.
I almost just think this is a playstyle that you don't enjoy, because what you're describing, what you're describing, the reactionary tactics, the having to give ground to save your allies. That's what I think of Citadel when I think of a defensive character. When I think of
then why do we build?
That's it.
But then why do I even have? Like, why do I even have a spear at that point?
For a first strike?
I feel like you could, like, drop a pillar of flame that is napalm that does... It could do the exact same thing.
The reason is for the same reason that the Romans had a spear wall behind that and a gladius. The reason is that it's going to slow... They can keep advancing while it slows their enemy trying to get in.
I couldn't advance, though.
No. you're thinking of it in terms of they've already engaged you. Mm-hmm. It deters engagement. And then the moment they do engage you, you get one free hit. And if they get inside, you're like, oh, well, no problem. I've got all this armor, and I'm just going to stab you with my sword.
It didn't feel like it deterred any engagement, though.
It absolutely did. I think the problem is Liam didn't tell you that. Like, so in the moment, he wasn't like, oh, he's going to try to come in, but there's that spear. And
no, he did. So, like, what during thing, and the wolves were there, they're like, fuck, like, there was
so you know, yeah, he had to be more vocal about it then, but 100% it deterred engagement. Like, it deterred engagement against Phryxa, who doesn't have a shield.
Yeah,
you didn't feel it, which is a problem, right? Like, that's
right.
That's
and I'm open to, like, because I've done support class characters, I've done, like, the stealth stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've been a tank when I was in your campaign, and, like, I get it, but I don't, for whatever reason. And I think there's something to it, because as soon as we were in that one place, and I didn't, like, suddenly start rolling gold every time, I felt that I made a plan and followed through. Yeah. Whereas every other fight before, whenever we were outside in a large, and it was only in open areas. Anytime we were in a closed area, I felt like I had more agency.
Yeah, I was like, that is definitely where you shine. But the fight where you really mattered the most was the pit fight. Without any question.
With all the cages.
Without any question. If you had less armor, if you had less HP, if you threatened less of an area, those turtles would have ran through everything. Like,
you kept them literally on half the map.
I can totally see that, and I can totally agree, but does that make it fun?
No.
That's the thing.
But it also might be what you value. You, like, maybe the playstyle is a mismatch for you.
And I can totally concede to that. But it just seemed strange that when even looking at it on the paper, I'm going, I can't fucking wait to tear into this. And instead, I felt like I was just sort of standing there for most of the time.
See, I'm interested to see how Liam feels about this, because this is much more my speed of where I enjoy is two step Citadel, one step Command, mm-hmm, where I don't care. Like, I have to give ground, but as I do, hey, you over here, you hit this guy.
But I didn't have any of that. It's me just floating around the battlefield, and everyone says, you're doing a great job! And I go, I haven't landed a single hit this time. Like, I'm not.
Well,
I,
but you shut off entire wings of enemy advances.
Which is also in defense of the character you made for, like, not being able to hit. That was in your stats. Mm-hmm. And that benefited all of your Citadel abilities. Mm-hmm. Was a huge decline to your champion.
Yeah. I feel like champion, for the style of play that you enjoy, was the wrong choice. Right, like if you'd gone, I'm trying to think.
This is why I'm so torn on it, because half of it I really enjoyed, like half of our combat I really enjoyed, and then other ones it was like the entire time I felt like I'm useless. I'm not doing anything. Yeah,
you weren't built correctly to be a champion. Step one, I don't think, if that makes sense. Like even if you'd pick something like ice, step one,
that would have been way more.
It would have been closer to what you like. You know what I mean? Because you would actually be filling that area with things.
You could have also like,
or zealotry would have
picked an area
shit.
Ice blast, they've been slowed, they have to come at you slower, you'd be able to maintain that distance more.
There's something to that to say that as well. Yeah. I just think this like, specific
not being able to use helmet splitter or overwhelming strike to really do much.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did the most damage on missed opportunity attacks.
Right. but that's not fun. For me to say, here I go, I completely missed, and then all my other friends hit him, I go, oh, yay team. Like it doesn't engage me as much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's you.
For me, that would be
so satisfying.
The idea that more damage is done on my turn than anyone else's turn, no matter how I built that machine, I would love it.
I mean, yeah, it starts after a while. And granted, because I was rolling really terribly.
This is not a criticism.
No,
it's just saying we understand.
I started to feel like what's his face from Kung Pao. Where it's like we trained him wrong as a joke. Where it's like they literally, and I didn't take offense to it or anything at the time. But every time we were on the table, I hope Doug misses.
Yeah,
and it's like I don't want to miss though. I don't play this game to miss. Like I play this game to hit.
It's funny because on my turn, I said the exact same thing.
Yes. Right.
I'd be like, I hope I miss. I hope I miss. And then I do. And I'm like, yes! I get so excited. No, I agree. I do understand where you're coming from on this. And I do think it's a mismatch in play style. Because that's my number one. Like, if I had my go-to, I would just go core command, step one. I'd just go command all the way. And then just be like, you guys get it. I'm gonna shut down this. I'm going to prevent this enemy from doing that so you guys can get extra attacks and stuff. Like, I love that shit.
Yeah, Kelton would have been so much different without Take the Shot. If I hadn't had that ability to just be in somebody's face and let everyone else do something, that was a lot of fun. But you didn't have that same.
Here's the thing. So, Doug, we played in Liam's campaign in D&D 4th edition, where I played a warlord and you played a rogue.
Yeah.
And I gave you Take the Shot all the time.
Yeah.
Now, if we swap seats in that, would you have had fun as my character?
I definitely think so.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's different about that?
I am neither ranged nor up close. I am this weird middle ground where I'm not effective too close, I'm not effective far away, and if I miss my one shot, that's it.
So that was, by the way, that was true of my warlord. I used a reach weapon. It was the same problem.
But I don't have the ability to tell someone to take the shot, or at least not with the build that I made.
Right.
Like, I don't have the ability to control anything or anybody else. All I got is my spear.
At least not in a way that you value.
I suppose.
Or that you find fun.
But that's why I'm so torn on what is it. Is it me? Because I don't think it's the build, because everything makes sense number-wise. And I know it's not the way Liam built the encounter, but something about half of the encounters, I just was like, this is not, I'm not feeling it. And then the other half of the encounters, I'm like, this is fucking great.
Like, I think part of this might be ameliorated by the changes to the dice, by introducing the dice to your system.
That actually might solve a lot of it. I have to take a look at where I was.
So for instance, Liam, you're not champion anything? You're champion one, right?
I'm going to be playing as core champion, step one champion, and step one scale.
Okay. Can I see your sheet?
Absolutely.
So your rapier does the same, you're using rapier?
Yes.
Your rapier does the same damage as a spear, one-handed.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, what was Grandin strength, two?
I think so. The damage was just a D6.
Right. But it's tier 2 damage,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just talk about the dice. So say you hit, okay? You do helmet splitter.
Which I couldn't with a spear, but...
Right. It increases your dice tier by 25, I believe. So the difference is, if you do helmet splitter, it tripled your damage before, right? Which is 3D6 plus 3, right?
If that's the strength, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so 3D6 plus 3. All right. in the new dice tier system, Helmet Splitter with your one-handed spear would have done 2d12 plus a d8.
That may make the difference, so that when you finally do hit with that, that does seem to be something.
I think it's even a conversation of, if you're going Core Citadel, Step 1 Citadel, if you're thinking about damage, you're playing the wrong character. You're automatically setting yourself up to be dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm. And then the combination of what I had, which was the Champion Citadel mix, it's like Champion had a lot of aggressive stuff for me to use.
Extremely aggressive.
But if I'm Core Citadel, then... You know what I'm saying? It's like, what? Then who am I? You know, am I the guy who takes the hits and lays back? Or am I the guy that uses the champion, like, calling out my target?
Yeah.
Because that would have been useless for me, you know?
Well, but then, like, look at Gaylene. Used a two-handed spear, right?
Right. So that's what I'm saying. If I dropped the shield and go two-handed, it may have been a totally different game for me.
You would have been a completely different character.
She wasn't a tank.
Right. Liam would have treated everything very differently.
You know what? A possible solution might be, because you were talking about, if you do an opportunity attack and you hit him, maybe they won't go forward. Maybe if it's the sword and shield combo. Like, if there's something about that combo that's different than just using a one-handed spear.
Well, what would you have in your other hand? Like, another weapon?
If you just do... If I didn't have a shield and I just did a one-handed spear attack, why would I ever do a one-handed spear attack
I can't think of a reason.
Right. So I would go two-handed, which makes sense. And you get rewarded for that by doing double the damage, which...
Double the
strength damage.
Yeah.
But if the combination of I'm choosing the shield, I'm choosing a spear, something like the fact that I have the shield in front of me and a spear, and they're running straight for me, and they're going straight for a shield at the same time, it felt like, well, why do I have both of these if neither one of them dissuade a frontal attack?
We also, by the way, introduced shield bash mechanics.
That's true, that we
didn't implement in Liam's campaign, that it will be active in Max's.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantages of having a shield is, like, you can shut down casting. You can do all this extra stuff with a shield. Anybody can if they're just using a shield.
Right.
That might have made a big difference too.
So a lot of my problems are probably already solved.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think you do bring up an issue where, like, you want to get in and mix it up, and you felt like this is a mismatch, like at least in how it played. And I feel like the change to the dice tier system, you would have felt empowered by that version of Helmet Splitter.
I think already by looking at it, just the numbers.
And the idea that you could have done extra shit with your shield as long as you had a shield in your hand that you couldn't do if you were just two-handing a spear.
That's the thing. Because I think you hit to the point is that when an enemy got in to within one hex of me and my spear became useless, the only options I had were disengage or drop my spear.
Yeah.
So that felt like a restriction on my choices, as opposed to, oh, well, like, I could disengage, drop my spear, or I could shield bash, or I could do one other thing. Like, having only, like, literally only two options, that was where I'm like, all right, back to these two options again.
But it also sort of feels like, rather than seeing it as, like, if you stop thinking about the spear as your main weapon, but literally as just a first strike option for your sword and shield character, you realize that the system allows for that extra first strike. Like, that's a bonus you couldn't get in other systems.
And how much of a time did it take for me to drop my spear and then draw the sword?
Free action to drop.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Swift action to draw.
Okay.
So, effectively, no extra time. Mm-hmm. You just got a free attack, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't view it that way, it doesn't matter.
It just seemed weird to, like, I have the spear. They come in there. All right, now the routine. Drop this. Pick up this, stabby, 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 and then, but it's sort of like once the first wave comes, I get one hit with a spear, so I'm carrying a spear just for the first hit, which will do the same amount of damage as if I just stabbed him with my sword.
And we fought, and here's another thing that we didn't really deal with. We didn't fight any large creatures with reach.
Yeah.
So let's say we're fighting bad guys who can reach into multiple spaces. You're better off using a reach weapon.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Sure. We didn't have to deal with that, so that didn't really feature that much.
It may sound like I'm complaining more than I actually feel, but it's just that because I'm so puzzled by it, because half the time I was having a freaking blast, and the other half I was like, I feel completely useless. And it was so strange to me to be bouncing back and forth.
Does it make you feel any better knowing that we felt exactly the opposite? Standing behind you?
It does.
Or even just in opposition. We're like,
yeah.
Grandin was, especially Grandin and Frixa together, were incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
And then you put the two...
Then he puts the shield on me and all that shit.
And then the two marksmen behind you were like, anytime anything came up to you and they would try to move around you, they would be immediately heinously punished.
Yeah, the idea that... So if you asked me mechanically for the character of Phryxa plus a fire mage plus a marksman, what's the final part of that puzzle?
Right.
I would have built Grandin. You know, like it was perfect. It was such a perfect setup. But if that kind of that tank role might not be something that you enjoy, because generally
I played as Jeroz in your campaign and I loved doing it.
But it was very different. That was
a tank by virtue of you had a bunch of HP.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they mean by tank in that system.
Mm-hmm.
Tanks for us are you slow or stop movement and you just make yourself so annoying where the idea of going after the mages is punished. You have to give up something major to get around you. And you did that job. You were hard. You were easy to push back. You were impossible to circumnavigate. I had to deal with, like, anything that was in front of you.
You have to focus.
You have to focus on
Grandin instead of somebody else.
I believe you. I just didn't feel it. Because, I felt like I had to stay where I was. I couldn't charge in and say, everyone, bad guys, all look at me. Focus on me. I'm here. Fight me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It just didn't.
Yeah, I guess if you were expecting that to be what it was, mm-hmm. I could absolutely see being disappointed because he's not very mobile.
Right. Because, when Slish was in trouble, getting chased by a giant turtle man, I was like, I'm going to start moving towards Slish to sort of just cut off that turtle at the pass, and so this way he could get away. There was no way I'd ever get over there.
No. Yeah, and from my perspective, by the way, I'm thinking that's Slish's fault, and he knew that going into it. He 100% made his bed on this one.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Max? You felt probably more that it was your responsibility to get close to him than it was for him to come rescue you.
Yes, definitely. I was more mobile. You were doing what you were supposed to do.
Right. And I knew I wasn't very mobile, but my instinct was I built this character to be a literal shield and only Frix is getting behind me.
Yeah, you were the wedge in the door. I was not expecting you to.
Yeah, Chuki and Slish definitely ran around a lot in ways I didn't expect. Whereas the only time that Phryxa got caught out was literally when he was the one awake on watch.
Yeah.
And then immediately tried to make his way back behind Grandin. Yeah. every time.
Right.
I feel like almost like I wish you could have played the game from my perspective to see what Grandin brought to the table, because it was enormous for Phryxa. It was huge.
I do feel really good knowing that everyone felt that way, because I felt am I even really doing anything? So fighting the fleshmaker or whatever in there, going up against the wall and shit. I was like, this is what I've been waiting for. Really digging into it.
It's funny because that's where I felt the most limited, because it threatens such a large area that I can't move freely. And when it comes to the things I have to do, I need to be in certain proximities to people to have.
That's exactly what I was trying to say earlier. Is that I feel like I need to be in a certain spot. But I didn't have the choice to go there, because as soon as I move too close or too far away, I'm ineffective in an offensive way. Mm-hmm. So I may as well, if I have to get into a situation where I'm not focusing on the offensive, I may as well get to where other people are. And the person who was there was Phryxa. So I get it. Because he
was cowering behind you the entire game.
And to clarify, I know a lot of this probably had to do with all of my failed rolls in the first two combat encounters. I was like, oh, fuck, another god dang. It's like I rolled really shittily.
It's always more fun when you roll well.
That's true.
And we have talked about this as well, is that Liam may have made everybody's dodge too high.
Especially at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, that's something we went into on the design episodes where we talked about what is your average chance to hit and what should it be to make things difficult. And that's just a GM thing. You have to play around with your party, because
it's just that when I kept failing my rolls, that's when the things that bothered me started to surface. But then as soon as I was in a position inside where it's like, okay, now I'm hitting this guy, those things went back down again.
Oh, the first time you landed in the fight, the first time you landed that strike, I can't remember the name, but that blocks off a space.
Yes. No, that was, I was
yeah,
like,
that was, yeah, that was, I was
game
like,
changer.
I was like, here's where we win immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where Liam was like, god damn it.
Yeah. I was so pissed.
That was the best.
Because I remember having to open up that door, and that's when it's just like, all right, the boss is clearly in here. And I'm like, why go into his area?
So think about this now from Chuki and Slish's perspective, the two range characters. They have to shoot through cover to hit the enemy, because we are blocking the shot.
Right.
They didn't give a shit. They were like, great, I'll stand back here and be safe and take a -4 to every roll. I don't care. This is great. And they missed a lot as a result, but you'd take it.
Like, it was worth it. We still won.
This can go on as many rounds as we need. Like, just keep shooting him.
And that's where I felt like I was the immovable object, but I chose to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and then I kept him at bay as opposed to being flanked. I could be flanked so easily that whatever plan I had of like, you shall not pass this corridor. Mm-hmm. But if a trap door opened and I got flanked on that side, then it's like, I guess I got to move. And now he can come right on in.
Yeah.
Or you could draw your sword and just sit.
The more I'm thinking about it, I mean, we know Citadel, the primary focus of, like, it's the reason why we switch. It's one of the primary reasons we switched to hex instead of the square grid,
right.
is that how do you make tanks work?
Yeah.
Like, how do you allow them to control an area? And I do think it is by shutting down movement. Really?
Yeah.
Like that's how you do it.
Well, I chose it for that one perk because I knew if I had a reach weapon and I can shut down any square within or any hex within my reach,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, damn, this is gonna fucking rock. But when I was outside, it's like, I actually tried it in one of them. I don't remember which encounter it was, but I remember I was like, I'm going to shut down that one. And they just went completely around it because we're outside and it just didn't matter.
Well, I mean, but that would be true no matter what.
Exactly. So I'm like, oh, well, you know, we're outside, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
But even in that situation, they have to take an extra step or an extra two steps.
Sure.
And I think the thing you aren't enjoying is your existence complicates you are immediately reactionary. That
right.
is true. That is something that we probably do have to work with. But also, on the other side, everyone else is also completely reactionary to you because you warp the game. Like, you're a black hole.
Right.
Yeah. If we make it so that all opportunity attack, so any opportunity attack provoked by movement,
mm-hmm.
you can choose to deal half damage and stop the movement.
Yes.
Anybody can do this. And the fact that Citadel gets, by the way, something you didn't take advantage of, +2 to all opportunity attacks.
Yeah. I did for the first half.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, like, oh, fuck, I'm forgetting to do that. So I started to do it after that. But yeah.
So that plus unlimited opportunity attacks for being core Citadel. I feel like those things might be the thing that makes you feel like,
yeah,
you ain't getting
like
by.
If someone's running to go, you know, get Slish over there.
If they got enough room to get all the way around,
right.
Well, fine.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But if you're gonna cross through a threatened hex, I stick you for an opportunity attack, and you just keep running like nothing ever stopped you, then it's like, well,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
at least creatures that are your size.
Yeah, like if you're a giant thing, then sure.
Yeah, you're not gonna your poke isn't gonna stop it.
A size above, I think, is a good.
Yeah,
a large creature just be like, "Ow!"
But to make that a Citadel perk sounds like I'd be like, I feel like I would have had more options then because it's like,
no, I'm saying make it any opportunity attack provoked by movement,
mm-hmm.
you can choose to deal half damage to stop the movement. It's not specific to any path. That's just the truth of opportunity attacks, just like shield bashes,
mm-hmm.
because the only person who would choose to do that is Citadel, really.
Yeah, any damage dealer would immediately choose damage.
Yeah.
That's what I had to think.
No, it's useful. I mean, for sure. I'm surprised to hear that because the rest of us were so, like, glowing review of Grandin. Like, right.
I literally built my character in Max's game because I was like, man, I want to check out armor.
The armor was fantastic.
Frustrating.
That was my one bit of solace throughout the entire thing was like, oh, fuck, it's too close now. I got to fall back. And I'm feeling really limited here. And then I'd be gently reminded every time you'd be like, does this number hit, Doug? And I would go, actually, yeah, that hits. You'd be like, great, this much damage. And I go, oh, okay, no big deal. And you'd be like, son of a bitch, I hate you. Like, no matter what, you couldn't ruffle my feathers.
And I'm sad that you never got to step two Citadel.
Oh, my God.
Because you get overrun.
Yeah.
Which is, if somebody hits you and doesn't attack that doesn't touch your hit points, you immediately get an opportunity.
Oh, God damn it, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
It would have been so good.
Oh, I would have felt so good.
Yeah. It's a great, I feel like that's how we build Citadel.
Because you take shielding first, how do we work with that?
It says, I forgot the exact language, but it's the idea is like with shielding and armor,
damn.
If it doesn't get through either of them, you get an opportunity attack.
And how does shield bash work now?
Shield bash is you can use it as an opportunity attack. And if you hit somebody with your shield, you do no damage. But you can, if somebody's casting,
you can
hit them and it will stop whatever they're casting, which is enormous.
It's insane.
But it doesn't do any movement or doesn't do any... Does it cancel movement?
Well, usually they're not going to be moving. So if you could do an opportunity attack and cancel their movement as part of opportunity attacks, you don't need your shield bash to do that.
Well, if the shield... You could only bash them if they're literally adjacent to you.
Yes.
So unless someone's running adjacent past me, there'd be no way to shield bash them?
Well, think about this. You run up in a caster's face,
uh-huh.
and you got a shield equipped. And they're like, I'm going to cast this daily spell that's enormous. And you just, bap.
Well, with my
and it's expended,
but my speed wasn't very because of the armor and stuff. Mm-hmm. The chance of me like running across a field to stop somebody didn't seem
not in the campaign we played.
Yeah,
but that is something that will come up a lot because you could also be
is
like,
it step three that you no longer get the movement?
Yeah, six.
All right. Oh damn. All right. Yeah, that's an answer for everything, I guess.
Citadel gets every step of Citadel is
step four is heraldry.
Pretty fucking good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like Citadel is no joke. But yeah, so step one and core are literally just I am an island. Fuck off.
So as it was built, I said if I was going to play it as I built it before, mm-hmm. I would probably change like maybe the main weapon stay or whatever. But with the adjustments that we've already talked about, like with the weapon damage being different and everything else, I would do it again exactly as I built it just to see how different it is because I think that even those minor changes would help me feel like mm-hmm. I have. When in those low moments when I felt like I had no options, I know now I have at least two more options.
Party composition also would have changed immediately because there was, you had no other melee fighter.
Yeah.
No core melee fighter.
Yeah.
Sticking
that's very true
and that
too.
That also completely changes because the thing is someone could have gotten directly in your face and mm-hmm. if you had a champion scoundrel next to you, you wouldn't have to hit the guy in your face.
Yeah.
That guy's dead.
Yeah.
That guy is dead.
That's an excellent point.
So here's I want to get your feelings on this based on the experience that you've had. So we actually had it wrong on the order of what when Citadel gets what.
Mm-hmm.
So step two Citadel, you get armored dodge, where if you're using a shield and heavy armor, you get +1 to your dodge.
That's pretty cool.
And you no longer suffer movement penalty for wearing heavy stuff. That's a step two Citadel.
Wow, that's pretty good.
and you get a daily attack called Sacrificial Dive.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
An ally takes damage that reduces them to 0 hit points. You move your speed, and you push the ally into an adjacent space, and you occupy the space that they left. The triggering attack hits you instead of them, and you may immediately counterattack. So you take the damage, and you immediately counterattack with something that adds 10 to your weapon tier.
God damn.
That's sacrificial.
Gnarly.
Damage. Yeah.
I'm just going to go core Citadel, Citadel, Citadel.
Straight Citadel.
It should be good.
Works
incredible.
So that's step
with
two.
With heraldry, it's disgusting.
Step three is when you get overrun, where you get an attack against anything that doesn't get through your shielding and armor.
Damn.
And then you get immovable object, where you spend a move action, and they cannot force you to move. So they can't push you, they can't pick you up, they can't do anything. Yeah. You spend your move action to brace yourself against
it. This all sounds incredible, and that's why I knew that whatever problems I had, it wasn't about the step one or core Citadel. It wasn't about adding the champion to it. It wasn't about that exact combination. It had something to do with the options with the weapons that I had and the shield. It was mm-hmm. something about this combination of shield and spear. In my mind, it wasn't playing out as good as I thought it would. Mm-hmm. But you've already answered that stuff. And especially if I got up to step two Citadel or step three Citadel, then it's fuck, I don't even need the sword and shield thing that I thought I needed because I have this awesome ability instead. Mm-hmm. So that's already pretty much assuaded.
And then at step four, you get heraldry, which is whatever you decide
heraldry,
to be.
Heraldry is some of my favorite shit we've done at all.
Agreed. Yeah.
It works so well mechanically and lore-wise for me. All right.
Well, I feel like that's enough for tonight. I do appreciate that, Doug. I think next time we'll get into what Max and Liam thought.
Yeah. We've addressed pretty much all of my concerns, and I feel much better. So
okay. Great. So, listeners, as always, you can find us on patreon.com/RPGFS. Please comment on the episodes if you care. And becoming a patron has tons of perks that are really useful, including getting the rule books, listening to everything that gets cut from the episodes that's interesting, and being able to create your own custom NPCs that are going to make it into the big city that I'm creating for the continuation of Echoes of the Star Crypt.
Ooh.
It's going to be fun. So far, it's looking really good. Additionally, if you want to interact with us directly, Patreon is the best way to do it. We all can comment on it that way, and it's we don't have to deal with, Facebook destroying our democracy and everything.
Our republic, thank you very much.
Our democratic republic. Additionally, we are on facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on Twitter at @HomebrewHombres.
You can also find us on Instagram at @RPGFromScratch, but that's all one word.
So thank you everybody for listening, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.